This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora e te whānau, and welcome to the AA Live radio show. This is a show and podcast that explores the ideas behind a way of recovery through the Alcoholics Anonymous program. My name is Mike, and thank you for tuning in for our first show of 2026.
Yoo-hoo!
And joining Sue and myself in the studio this evening, we'd like to extend a great welcome to our guest Joshua.
Kia ora.
Yeah. Kia ora, Joshua. Thanks for taking the time to be jammed into the studio with us tonight. How's things in your world?
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah, trucking along pretty good.
Excellent. Have you had a good week thus far?
Yes. Yeah. A little bit exhausting, but good.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Fantastic. Righto, should we start the show? Alcoholics Anonymous is a service based on alcoholics helping other alcoholics. We do the work through a 12-step program where recovering alcoholics support each other who want to stop drinking and where we learn how to live life. In the rooms of AA, by sharing and listening to the main theme of recovery by the way of the AA program, each one of us has finally come to the realisation that we are no longer able to handle alcohol. And we do the mahi together and work through the 12 steps. But the most important thing is that we also realise that we don't try to deal with the problem single-handedly. We bring the problems out into the open with other alcoholics, just like tonight.
Just like tonight. We would usually start an AA meeting in the rooms by reading out the Alcoholics Anonymous preamble, which outlines the fundamental thrust of how it all works. Josh, would you like to do the honours this evening?
Yep, cool. So, preamble reads, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Awesome. And just a little disclaimer, what you hear tonight are the opinions of the three of us in the show as individuals, not necessarily the opinions of Alcoholics Anonymous as an organisation. So we have guests who are invited to share their story and experience, but really it's just us, recovering alcoholics, talking about different aspects of our own journey.
And my turn for the daily reflection, I think, being the first show of the year, brimming with excitement, and this is for Tuesday, the 6th of January, and it's titled The Victory of Surrender. We perceive that only through utter defeat are we able to take our first steps towards liberation and strength. Our admissions of personal powerlessness finally turn out to be firm bedrock upon which happy and purposeful lives may be built. And that's from the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 21. And it continues, when alcohol influenced every facet of my life, when bottles became the symbol of all my self-indulgence and permissiveness, when I came to realise that myself, I could do nothing to overcome the power of alcohol, I realised I had no recourse except surrender. In surrender, I found victory. Victory over my selfish self-indulgence. Victory over my stubborn resistance to life as it was given to me. When I stopped fighting anybody or anything, I started on the path to sobriety, serenity and peace.
Cool. And so we're very, being January, we're very step one with our daily readings. And step one, of course, is that we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. So any thoughts on the reading? It was I really resonated with through the utter defeat aspect, I think.
It's got these kind of military overtones, isn't it? You know, the victory and the surrender, but it's like you're waving that flag, mm-hmm. you know, up and... And there's nothing, when I realised that you know, my life, I was powerless. Yeah, I was pretty willing at that point to finally to put the flag up and go, you know, help me, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the idea that the worse you are, almost, the better the program works for you. The gift of kind of powerlessness.
Yeah, like the gift of desperation sort of thing.
Gift of desperation, yeah. That's what I was thinking of, yeah.
Totally. Which is an acronym for God.
Yeah, that's true. I've heard that one. That's good. Yeah.
But then it's also the idea of victory, which I quite like, is it's, you know, you've won in a way. It's ironic. It's sort of pointing out that sort of, it's not an oxymoron, but, you know, you've sort of finally given over and now you can actually sort of get on to sort of, not the battle at all, because you've finished that battle in a way.
There's that story about it's often attributed to Native Americans, where there's two wolves inside your heart, the good wolf and the evil wolf, and the idea is that the stronger wolf is the one that you feed rather than the one you fight. So it's that, so the whole sort of idea that you feed the good wolf and surrendering is kind of like you don't fight you surrender, you just let it go, kind of thing.
Yeah. So that's our reading for this evening. Should we play a track? Yeah. What have we got going on there?
Joshua, what's
our first
songs
one, Josh?
I'll put it on. Sun in the Morning by Future Island.
Sun in the Morning by Future Island.
That's a great track. Is that one of your favourites there, Joshua?
Is it
a go-to?
Yeah, go-to kind of favourite. I think I even played it last time I was on the radio. I don't know. Yeah, it's just meaningful, I suppose. And
yeah,
same with my partner,
sure.
So,
yeah. That's really wonderful. Now, should we get into our main focus of the show, as we always do? We sort of do the, the prelude?
The warm-ups.
And then, and I was thinking, being the new year, we thought of looking at the theme tonight, and a theme of what I had it captioned here, of moving from isolation to connection, which is a lovely term. And in terms of step one, too, it can be really helpful for people that have considered they might have a problem with drinking, or they're questioning, you know, what is the impact of drinking in their lives, or else if they're just new to sobriety too. So the key part I thought we're looking at, and that's when I say moving from isolation to connection,
it's like the there's that
Johann, I'm trying to get my words out. Sorry about this.
There's that guy Johann Hari, who's like the he's quite a leading writer on addiction stuff these days. He started out as a journalist, and he kind of coined the expression came to the conclusion that after doing lots of research and interviews with people, that the opposite of addiction is connection.
Yeah, and so often in the deepest part of our addiction, you know, we've become incredibly isolated, and that can often be from people or even physically. You know, you stay at home, or you're sort of deliberately go and live way out on the coast or something. this is a biography of mine, but autobiography or something like that. But then often when you're isolated, it's also about your internal thoughts. You know, it's about your sort of self-critique, what's really going on inside you. And that's, I sense, well, it's not a heavy question. It's what I think we all have experienced in that real depths of addiction. And I was just thinking, Josh, you know, what was your life like at the point when you realised that, you know, your drinking had changed, or different types of stimulants or all sorts of things had come to this point? I guess if we've got the isolating off as a theme.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's really interesting. These things always seem to happen in AA, but this is just such a pertinent topic to me. Something I've been thinking about recently. Got a milestone coming up, so just kind of reflecting on my kind of AA journey. And this one is so pertinent to my life, because I was thinking about an experience I had. It must have been like within the first few weeks or so of coming into AA. That, you know, someone must have just shook my hand and kind of welcomed me to a meeting or something like that. And it was just such an affront. It was just such an event to me, and you know, kind of mourned at the time silently that I think that might have been the first time that someone had given me any physical contact in possibly, like, you know, years even. The isolation for me had gotten, yeah, really, really pervasive, really. It had isolated me from family, friends, anything. It really was just me and the bottle and the self-obsession, which for me was entirely just miserable, you know. I thought terribly of myself, but it was all that I pretty much did think about, which is, it was a really terrible, terrible place to be. And
did that sort of, start a little bit of isolation, and did it sort of increasingly get worse as they
progressive disease. Yeah. I think for me, what I tried to do, it was a bit of a geographical, but it was also when it dawned on me that all my friends were all, you know, they're all heavy drinkers, heavy users, and in some sort of vain attempt to think that I wasn't the problem. I tried to just detach from all these people, and I moved quite far away down into Dunedin. And obviously everything got worse. I had no friends, no one to talk to, and it was just this maelstrom in my head, just going around and just getting worse and worse. And it was really dark when I first got into the rooms. I was just such a broken person.
Did you know what was going on? Did you know what AA was about?
I had no idea. I don't even know where the idea of AA came from. You know, I've actually tried to rack my brain and think, you know, I think I had a friend whose father might have been in AA, and that might have been how I heard about it for the first time. You know, there are little ripples of sober people, you know, can touch people in just such strange ways. Because, I'd never met a sober alcoholic. I'd never heard of that kind of person or entity before. Only ever thought it was a pretty hopeless malady, you know, hopeless disease. So, I knew that it was the bottom of a very long to-do list of things to shape up, fix myself, you know. I tried so many things, read so many self-help books, you know. It's very much like the part of the big book, and was at the beginning of chapter 3 or something like that. I tried everything, and I don't know why AA was at the very bottom of this list, but it was. And it didn't come that easily to me in the beginning. I dipped my toes in AA. About 6 months, I tortured myself just coming to one meeting a week and not really doing anything, just kind of getting sicker and sicker. It was the head full of
AA. As soon as it finished, did you sort of get up and zip out the door again?
Yeah, totally. I was so used to that isolation and just so freaked out by people. And I was going to Monday night, which is my home group now, and just such warm and loving people there. It was really amazing, the amount of help and support and love that I felt. But it was challenging. It was confronting. It confronted my isolation, and it confronted just how bad I'd gotten. But I did keep coming back. I don't even know why. It was this powerful idea at the back of my mind that there was something there, that these people had the same thing as me, that same total powerlessness, I suppose, in terms of alcohol. But they were well. They were, like, truly well. And
Did you drink for the first 6 months sort of thing while you were coming in?
It was back where the Monday meeting was kind of right in the center of town. And I would go from the meeting and I'd go straight to, I think, Central Countdown and buy a bottle of wine or something like that. I was really challenged, I guess, by the idea of sobriety, and did not come easily to me in the beginning.
So 6 months, it sounds like there was a little bit of a click of gears.
Yeah, I think it was just I think AA just eroded at my stubbornness, and also I think slowly but surely I managed to just build up a bit of hope, you know, just the tiniest little glimmer of hope that there could be. The stories that I was hearing in AA, you know, and relating to that, something like that might be able to happen to me. And I'd very slowly collected a little inventory of phone numbers, people to call. And I think then it gave me this hope that I could probably do what they were saying. I could try that one day, that one 24 hours. Yeah.
So that's some time ago now. I mean,
yeah, a few years.
Just a few years ago.
5 years ago now.
Five years.
That's awesome.
I mean, that's a huge amount of time, really. When I think about, like, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I really feel like 5 years is a decent chunk of time. It's like, I think I've even heard people completely change in the 5 year intervals in their life. So it's certainly been that kind of thing for me, and it's all been catalyzed by coming to AA entirely, really.
And in those 5 years, like I know you that, you know, you love reading and you're into botany.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
These dreams sort of coming true. I mean,
yeah,
these
totally.
Are more sort
yeah.
of tangible rewards, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. I think yeah, everyone searches for their higher power in different places, but for me, nature was always my thing. I think I was just thinking, my first sober day, I went to, I think, Bethune's Gully, just a little kind of nature walk, and I spent the whole day there just trying to be in nature and just trying to feel some sort of semblance of peace. And yeah, from being able to join AA, get sober, yeah, my whole life is completely 180'd, and that for me has meant going back to university. I never thought I had it in me. I thought I would wreck my brain. I thought I was too dumb, you know, too undisciplined. But yeah, I'm doing a master's now, which is just insane.
Congratulations!
Yeah, thank you. And that's not a boast. It's all the gifts of the program. Yeah, definitely could not have done this at all on my own.
And you've got a lowered car.
Yeah, I do.
You've got low suspension.
Yeah,
I mean, I kind of rate that. I rate that as a sort of good achievement.
That surprises me for some reason. I don't know.
Oh dear. Yeah.
Hey, so would you like to share a little bit about your journey in general? Just sort of share your sort of experience, strength, and hope. And
yeah,
we've sort of touched around the sides of things and how you ended up getting there. But would you like to share a bit more about what it was like and what happened and what it's like now?
Yeah, I'll give it a go. Yeah, totally. I suppose, yeah, in terms of the unmanageability that we discuss in step one, my unmanageability was just, you know, it was internal. You know, external didn't look good, but, you know, like, I had a car, had a job. I was just kind of chugging along. But the unmanageability was just this unbelievable darkness that I was dealing with completely on my own. This just self-hatred that I couldn't imagine, you know, wishing this on an enemy. It pretty much tainted every aspect of my life. I just despised myself. And yeah, I don't know. I think it was interesting that, you know, moving from isolation to connection, I know that I guess I could talk more about how bad it got, but I was just thinking just today, you know, the people that I spend my time around, just how much more connected to I am. Everywhere I look around me, there just seems to be these AA people. You know, I think quite early on in my journey, I think I was saying that I was struggling to find work, something like that, just the offside of a share. And one of these old timers kind of said, oh, you can come work with me. And so you know, I think this is in my first year, ending up spending just hours and hours with this very spiritual, very AA kind of guy. And that just, you know, we would talk just constantly throughout the work we were doing together, and that kind of gave me this real foundation of what AA is kind of like. And then,
because you see it and you can feel it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
With another person that you really you get that in the rooms, of course, but if you have that sort of privilege of being alongside, someone who is committed to AA, is really. His sustained sobriety is a game changer.
Yeah, he really took me under his wing, and I think that helped me so much, because it really was that place where I didn't really have any friends, I didn't really know anyone in the city, and I could really kind of attach to this person, and he came, you know, surrogate kind of father, grandfather figure, something like that. But there were all these role models in the rooms. You know, there was like a grandmother of AA at the time that talk with for hours about this and that. And then eventually the one person that became my sponsor as well was someone, you know, I've spent just, I don't know, countless hundreds of hours with now, one-on-one. And, they've been able to model to me what it looks like to establish, like, a healthy adult relationship with someone. Because it was certainly, you know, never really shown to me, and it wasn't something that came naturally to me at all as well. And then slowly from working with these people, it can expand out, and it has managed to expand out of the rooms of AA and into, you know, the kind of more normal or traditional, or what do you say, aspects where, yeah, I've managed to have romantic relationships in AA, you know, both coming in and out of relationships and doing that in a healthy way, which I never thought was possible for me. And, establish true long-term friendships as well, which is just that moving to connection. I think it's like a gist that my sponsor said right at the beginning was that, you know, it says never to make any big decisions in your first, year of sobriety or something. And we were talking about relationships and stuff. And he was like, well, I think, you know, you've gotten yourself so isolated and so unwell in that aspect that your challenge is almost like the opposite. You know, try and establish as many connections as you can. And as far as I can tell, so much of my learning in AA has come through. It all happens in relationship with people.
Mm-hmm.
These like kind of close connections where I can slowly get the same lesson almost over and over and over again until it finally kind of finally works itself, you know, into me as a habit that I can do. I can hear, you know, my sponsor's voice in the back of my mind. I can hear this other guy's voice, and it started to like kind of really cut through the otherwise mental kind of noise and the stubbornness that still might be there, and start adopting some of the practices that they've shown me, and it really transmitted the AA program in a really like beautiful and unadulterated way, I guess. Very little of themselves in there, very much the big book, you know, was in there. So I'm enormously grateful for these people. The idea that I could, you know, that my milestone that I'm coming up to in recovery, it just so doesn't feel like it's something that I did or that I own, or, you know, that thinking about celebrating it with the group, because it so is something that the group has achieved, you know, and I've just been gifted, really. So it's been really beautiful, and I feel so much like cradled by AA. I think that's the funny way that I kind of imagine it. Everywhere I looked, everywhere I turned, I seemed to have AA there for me in my early recovery, and that just kind of helped keep me on the straight and narrow right at the beginning when I was still really, really flaky and really still obsessed with alcohol, I guess. Yeah.
How do you find it 5 years on? Do you feel like the program continues to deepen for you and develop? And
absolutely. Yeah, it just there never seems to be a plateau. And I know I've noticed that the moment that I stop doing anything in AA, you know, it's like a conveyor belt that I'm on. You know, I backtrack really quickly, so I just have to keep on making steps forward. I think that all of that comes from working with these people. But yeah,
because I see you during the week, which is really fantastic.
Yeah,
often on Friday nights.
Yeah.
And then Monday nights.
Yeah.
They're two great meetings. And are they both your home groups, or just one of them is your home group?
They're kind of both my home groups. They were the ones that had the old timers crowded around them the most, the people that I resonated with the most. I think I ended up kind of going to their meetings, and then they both became my home group. And that's where I kind of get the kind of bookend my week, you know, Monday, Friday. And keep me kind of well established, I guess. Well put together.
And you've got to turn up with the milk and the door key and those types of things?
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, the idea of service.
Oh,
you
I
know,
was,
the idea of helping others.
I was so lucky.
Working with others, that's the one I was trying to find.
On one of the meetings, a Friday night meeting, there was this kind of council of elders, I think. There was like the conscience group was a group of like, say, five people that have been running this meeting for just years and years, some of them decades. And before I'd even reached this milestone that they'd agreed as the level that you need to get to start doing service, they all had kind of seen me, seen my journey, and they offered me a service position quite early on, I think before I was one, or around that time. And it was to open the meeting. You know, I had the keys to this meeting. And I don't know how, it just seemed to really gel with my personality that I had to show up. I had to come to this meeting no matter what. And I had people that kind of depending on me. So it wasn't so much about me getting to this meeting. It was me getting to this meeting for all these other people. And I don't know why, that just really worked with my mind.
It's
and it got me
accountability or something, eh?
Exactly, yeah. It got me to all these meetings that I didn't want to go to. And now, I just show up.
Well, not so much not want to go to. It's like, it's not begrudging. It's like, oh, it's much easier to stay in, especially with Dunedin winter. It's like, oh, do I have to go and do that? It's really dark.
Yeah, yeah.
But, there's a sort of, there is joy. Yeah, there is joy.
Totally.
Cause,
yeah.
I help with the Saturday morning meeting. And we've got sort of so off the charts now that I sort of open an hour early. You know, get all the chairs out and we think, well, how am I going to need? We might need a few more because it's a nice hot day, or if it's these types of things, or it's a nice morning. And then we end up having a pre-meeting because a whole lot of people have caught on. And so you get about three or four, not a whole lot, but you get a handful. And everyone's talking about what they got up to that week. And then maybe they're sort of, if it's coming up before Christmas, they were talking about all the little booties they had to knit for certain things and what was the stitch they were going to use.
Yeah.
And I just love it.
Mm.
It's great. And people are swapping recipes. I know it's for everyone's listening out there, this sounds like, well, come on, you're meant to be talking about an AA meeting and sobriety. But this is the things that happen. You get this sort of wonderful crossover of all sorts of information and advice and a lot of care as well.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I guess it's there's so many things that AA has to offer, but for me, fellowship has been just such a core, essential part of that. And arriving to meetings early so that you can actually get involved and tied into other people's lives and find out what's going on with them. That's all part of it. And being able to share your journey with them and even just the humdrum stuff, I guess. Yeah, can just make you feel part of something, because before I was never able to just be one among many, you know, just one part of any sort of group. I had to rise myself above or kind of tuck myself underneath people, whereas just being part of this fellowship has been, you know, getting me the right size, you know, to just be one of the AA members that just show up and talk to people. Yeah,
beautiful. Hey, what do you think about playing another track?
Yeah. What's next up? What's your next selection, Joshua?
There we go.
Oh, we didn't get to intro it.
What have we got lined up? What are we playing?
Oh, it's called On Division Street by the Nation of Language.
Wonderful. Rock and roll. So we're thinking about step one, right? So if we're thinking about powerlessness and unmanageability, what was the sort of like, how, in what ways do you feel like your life was getting unmanageable, Josh? You kind of alluded that lots of it was sort of internal stuff.
Yeah, totally. I think powerless over alcohol. I think part of it is like the obvious stuff. Like I could never really get my life together. I could really never, you know, get things off the ground. This came to like chopping and changing, trying to get a career together. I ended up, doing all of these things that just would ultimately lead nowhere. Had no kind of traction, and I really do think that so much of it was because there was this you know, at the back of my mind, lingering idea of just alcoholism, you know, getting back through, just trying to get through a day to be able to drink at the end of it. That was the kind of prerogative. So all of the other kind of essentials in life were just kind of secondary. And so, yeah, I spent, I don't know, more or less a decade of just kind of wheel spinning, just not really getting anywhere, not really doing anything. Tried one trade, tried another trade, and you know, yeah, always a bit flaky, and never managed to get anywhere. And that was just the kind of physical stuff. So I was always like, just completely broke. Some people have very glamorous kind of experiences in drinking or drugging or whatever it might be, but mine certainly wasn't. Mine was always scraping the bottom of the barrel, trying to get freaking dollars together to get really
looking
high.
Under the mattress around the corner of the bedside table.
Yeah, totally.
Scraping up the last dollar.
Yeah, yeah. And then I guess even in getting into recovery, some chose to become a student even longer. So it's never hasn't completely turned around. But certainly the unmanageability doesn't look like that. But I suppose what makes life manageable now is it's not so much the kind of the physical things that I've got. It's more like the kind of slow ability to accept things for being the way that they are. So it's not so much focusing on the things that I don't have and trying to focus so much more on the things that I do have. And then you know, the moment that my brain is actually cleared of alcohol and the obsession, then, yeah, like I've said before, I can actually start doing things, start getting my life together, and that's meant studying.
But even if you're studying too, like the idea of even concentration, you know.
Yeah.
I know it seems a really tiny thing, but it is when you're distracted or you're when I was in active addiction, I think anxiety was really how to sort of flip between things.
Yeah.
Really intense, you know, and then drop things off.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
If you're an undergrad, I guess at that stage, you would have been, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's tricky.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, that's just a very applied, practical example.
Yeah. I guess I was a real perfectionist, I think. I always used to think that if I couldn't do it absolutely perfectly, if I didn't have the right tools or if I didn't have, you know, whatever, I just wouldn't do things.
It's very all or nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah, yeah. And then otherwise I get really obsessive with things and try and go all the way and become like the world expert on stupid little facets of something. So I guess being able to just accept and living in the day, being able to just kind of break apart something that's otherwise really quite difficult series of tasks and just break them down into something that's just more manageable, which is a bite-sized little what can I do today.
I liked what you were saying when you talked about accepting, sort of learning to accept what the things you have. Mm-hmm. I can't remember how you quite worded it, but I was in an online, and I do a couple of Zoom meetings and stuff because I'm on a bail curfew, so I can't get out that much in the evenings. There's an expression that someone used, and you may be familiar with it. I'm not sure. I hadn't heard it before, and I thought it was very good. It was, if you want to have what you want, you have to want what you have.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I thought that was very profound.
No, I totally. I've heard a similar kind of sentiment. I think it's the idea of I make myself wealthy by wanting less. You know, and I think my life getting a little bit simpler, and I hear this shared by the old timers an awful lot, is things get very simple. What, you know, when we're younger, or when I was certainly drinking, my aspirations were just enormous. You know, if I wasn't, this or that, you know, really wealthy or, you know, highly academic, whatever it might be, then it's not worth doing. And then, people will share at the end of their kind of careers that the simple kind of joys are the things that have become really, really important to them. And I suppose I start seeing that kind of being able to kind of glean some of that wisdom and take it into my kind of journey at this point and this stage.
That's really relatable for me. I feel like there's real serenity and simplicity, I think.
Mm.
I used to have such a chaotic and dramatic life, just that I really love my simple.
Everything piled up like a big club sandwich.
Yeah.
yeah.
But sort of falling apart. You know, when you put too much things and it just slides everywhere.
Yeah. Way too much mayonnaise or something.
Yeah. I've heard that like sentiment of like, what is it? The road getting narrower. And it's something I absolutely totally didn't understand. Some of the really beautiful people that I admired in AA would often talk about that. And I think I guess I conflated it with things getting really kind of draconian, you know, very strict. But yeah, I guess I'm coming to realize that what they're trying to talk about or what it embodies is just this inherent simplicity in their life. They've realized that if they try and take this program and the spirituality in it and apply it in their lives, and some of that does come with, you know, daily disciplines, then everything gets really simple. You know, as long as they do that, then things can be, you know, mentally okay. And then any of the natural trials and tribulations of the day can all be kind of seen through that lens. And again, that those are the kind of things that, you know, I have to hear, you know, 100 times in the rooms, or I have to have a one-on-one conversation 100 times before I actually can embody those lessons and start doing them myself, I guess. Yeah.
And when you come into the rooms, did you listen to what was being said, of course? Did you find a sponsor quite soon into that, or did you... Yeah, what was your process?
Yeah, totally. It's one of those ones. It's like there's so many little miracles when I reflect back in AA. And mine was that when I was dipping my toes in AA and I was only going to one meeting and still drinking, there was a guy in the one meeting that I chose to go to. And I was on the edge of my seat every single time that he shared. He was so serene, I suppose you'd say. So he knew the program in and out, and it, you know, he had a wicked disease. When he shared, I could relate, and he'd even gone further, much further. But he was just so serene, I guess, peaceful. He seemed to really have figured things out in a way, and so for a while, I knew that I wanted to ask him to be my sponsor. And that whole thing we were talking about before, that isolation that I'd gotten myself into, I put it off for so long. Yeah. I found it so difficult. It was like asking someone on a date.
Absolutely.
But worse.
I can so relate to that.
Yeah. Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing.
Yeah, no, it's yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's a certain, all these new things that you do in life when it sort of gets sober, right? At first they're like, I can't do this. And then you realize, not told to do it, but that was one of the main instructions. And is when you get through, because it just really helps, you know, helps you stick.
Yeah, I really relate to the sort of asking someone out on a date sort of thing. I think maybe an early recovery, certainly for me, as I, you know, and I expect quite a lot of people, is coming in with a lot of self-doubt and low self-esteem. Mm-hmm. You know, I can really relate to what you're saying. You'd seen someone that you sort of thought you really liked their message and you wanted to ask them, and I remember asking my sponsor for the first time, and I was sure he was going to say no, and I was sure that he hated me, and I was sure that he thought I was a complete dick and stuff.
Yep.
And he instead just said yes and was very flattered and kind.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think, again, I don't know why, I always find myself reflecting back and just not really... It's uncomfortable sometimes just how lucky I feel like my journey has been. Because, my sponsor's, you know, he knows the book inside and out and you know, really educated in terms of AA. But also, you know, the stuff that he does for work is you know, very kind of therapy related, sort of psychotherapy. So he can kind of weave all of this into our kind of work together, which is something that I really need, because, you know, so much of my disease has kind of shown up in all these other places, and I got a lot of mental health issues as well. So being able to have sponsor on call, but also to talk to him in these kind of therapeutic ways, but because it's a completely different relationship, it's not like a therapy relationship. He can be very honest. He can be much more like kind of Well, I don't know. I don't want to say the word strict, but he can get right to the point of things. I just feel how lucky that I've managed to establish this kind of such a healing relationship. Constantly ongoing. I can have problems to this day, and we're just kind of picking them apart and working them through. And it's like a, I don't know, it's hard to describe the kind of sponsee relationship. I'm sure they're all kind of unique to themselves, but it's very like kind of brotherly kind of thing. And I've seen him go through such difficult times as well, and it's constantly inspiring to see him go back to basics. You know, the advice that I might go to him with some catastrophe is the same advice that I see him taking on a daily basis, and it is really simple stuff sometimes.
Beautiful. I was thinking we should play another track.
Yeah,
what do you reckon?
What's
the last track you've got lined up for us?
I think I'm very relaxed for January. I'm sort of chomping at the bit.
It's very hot in here as well. it is Arcade Fire and Sprawl 2, it's called.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, awesome, Joshua. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. It's been awesome to have you and just to share your experience, strength and hope with us.
It really has. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been awesome. Thank you.
So that's about all we've got time for tonight. So, just like to wrap things up. Alcoholics Anonymous is based on a 12-step program. And for those that aren't sure what that means, the 12 steps outline a path to spiritual progress through a series of actions designed to draw out a complete mental, emotional, and spiritual shift in perception. We believe the 12 steps can be a critical element of a long-term recovery program. So thanks everyone for listening this evening. It's been fun as usual, our first one for the year. And just one last thing for all of our listeners, that if you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, we can help. There are two ways to contact Alcoholics Anonymous. You can call us on 0800 229 6757. I once said the wrong number on this show, and hopefully nobody rang, desperately needing help. That was 0800 229 6757. And the New Zealand website is aa.org.nz, which is really worth exploring. It's got lots of meetings listed there, both online and in person, in different locations around the country. And if you have any queries or questions about our show, then you can email us directly at aalive@aaotago.org.nz. And remember that you can listen to the show again if you miss parts of our conversation this coming Sunday night from 8:30 p.m. And plus, you can download the show from the ORFM website, which is or.org.nz/shows/aa-live.
I just Googled ORFM AA and it comes up. So what was that? And you can come and download our show, because we had good news, didn't we, Mike?
We did. We had it.
Are we allowed to share that?
I don't see why not.
Okay. You're going to be blankly.
We're
awarded the ORFM top podcast, is that right?
I think it was, the most popular.
The Air Awards of 2025, so it was the most popular, which the way they calibrate that is the amount of times it's downloaded. Yeah, so I was really excited about that. We get a little certificate.
Yes, and a little trophy.
A little trophy.
Which we're going to fight over who's going to take home.
So thank you all, everyone out there who has been quite dedicated, especially in the last year. I hope that we're really sort of making some good progress with the shows and the people that we have sharing their stories with us.
Yeah. And it's awesome to know that people are listening and engaging, so that's cool. And yeah, please do drop us an email at aalive@aaotago.org.nz if you do want to give us any feedback, because the show's made for you guys, so tell us what you want.
Fantastic. Take care, everyone. Until next time, mate wa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.